Good evening, everybody, and welcome to this evening's teleseminar called Awaken the Alchemist Within. My name is Damien Sen, and it's a great pleasure to have you on the call this evening. In a few moments from now, I'll be introducing our very special guest, John Wadsworth. But before I do, I just thought I'd share just how this call will work this evening, particularly if this is your first PeopleYouShouldMeet.com call that you've tuned into. Now, we're going to be on the call for around about an hour, and over the course of the hour, I will be asking John a whole series of different questions on our topic. Some of those questions will be my own, but the majority of the questions will have actually been submitted through the site prior to the call. Now, I've actually personally known John for probably around about a year now, and we first met on a workshop run by a very good friend of mine, Darren Eden. Now, Darren's also been a guest on People You Should Meet, and it was a magic workshop called The Initiation, and we had the opportunity to get to know each other down there, and we've stayed in touch over the past year. And more recently, I've had the great fortune to actually be on the receiving end of an astrological reading from John, and it really did open up some really interesting things for me in terms of the awareness of my journey so far, and also gave me some really key things to look out for in the years to come. Now, John himself has actually been an astrologer, a professional astrologer, since 1992, so he's got a wealth of experience. And he's also been a personal coach and mentor since the year 2000. Today, he works with individuals, groups, and organizations running and teaching astrology. And most recently, over the last couple of years, he's also brought together a program called The Alchemical Journey, and he's going to share more about The Alchemical Journey later on in the call. But yeah, it really gives me great pleasure to welcome to the call our very special guest, John Wadsworth. How are you doing there, John?
Hey, Damien. Good to hear you. How are you?
Very good. Very good. Welcome.
Great. And hello to everybody on the call as well. Yeah, really, really, really delighted to be here, and thanks so much for inviting me on.
That's great. It's my pleasure. Okay, John, I'm just going to actually start off from the very top. I really was just curious about how you actually began your journey in astrology.
Okay, well, it's one of the defining stories of my life, really. I was 21 years old. I'd never really contemplated astrology. It never really come into my world at all. And I was living a pretty conventional life. I was in my final year of university studying to become a chartered surveyor, a state surveyor like my father. Very unhappy, knew it wasn't for me, but didn't know what else to do, so I was kind of following fairly blindly. And the summer of 1990, I was down in Spain and staying in this incredible place, very remote part of southern Spain, just where Spain meets Africa, where Europe meets Africa. They call this place the Pillars of Hercules, which I've always thought was really quite significant because it was the beginning of a kind of hero's journey for me this time. And there was this night. It was a full moon. It was September 1990, and I had what I can only describe as an epiphany, totally out of the blue. Totally unexpected. It was a simple meeting with somebody who I met in a bar. I just walked up and started talking to him, and we had this kind of mystical thing go between us, like we kind of recognized each other. I'd never had that experience to that point, and here was somebody I was looking at them and seeing myself reflected back. It was quite extraordinary. And at the end of about half an hour of chatting to this guy and all these extraordinary coincidences in our lives, as if we'd kind of almost lived parallel lives, he just looked at me into my eyes and said, "You must be an Aries." And that was it. It was like a key was turned. He was right, of course. He got my sign. He wasn't an astrologer. He just had this intuition because he was an Aries. He recognized something in me. And it just began. This moment just opened up this sort of chain of events, the first of which was I just kind of, in a kind of daze at this revelation, because he started telling me what that meant, which was very exciting, because I'd never even considered what that might mean. I walked outside into this perfectly clear sky with a full moon. And the tide had come right up and surrounded this beach bar that we were in. It was just amazing, you know. It was like the whole moon experience surrounded us. And I suddenly got this overwhelming realization of the connection between the above and the below, between the sky and the earth, between the stars as they move around us in their orbits, the moon and my own experience of myself in my body, in the world. And I can't describe it, but it was as if I downloaded this knowledge. It just poured into me to the point where it was overwhelming. And it wasn't like I was kind of thinking, oh, this is interesting, or this might be. It was like a total knowing that this was true in some way, that this was real, that it was, it rang every bell in my being. And it was so overwhelming. I couldn't go back then to the life I had before. It was a totally life-changing moment. And it changed everything. It changed my whole way of seeing the world. It changed my whole paradigm of how I saw the world. And my life as it had been up to that point just crumbled before my eyes. Over the following 6 months, I lost every single friend I had because they all thought I'd just gone mad. I just devoured astrology books, read everything I could find. And I had a series of extraordinary visions and realizations and incredibly powerful dreams. And I was on this kind of roller coaster of realization. And in one sense, it threw my whole world, it tore my world apart in one way, but it also began a very deep and profound healing process. And I think that healing process is about weaving back together things that I'd forgotten, I think we have collectively forgotten, are actually connected. And so it began a healing process, but it began it through a crisis. This realization provoked this most extraordinary crisis in me. But that crisis was also the beginning of a healing journey. And I'm fascinated by the etymology of this word crisis, because it really means turning point. And it really refers to the beginning of a healing process, but it also exposes the wound of separation. So that was really my initiation, and I use that word, you know, quite deliberately. That was really my initiation into astrology.
Wow.
So I've always worked as an astrologer from that basis, that astrology actually, if we work with the magic, with the alchemy of this forgotten art, of this ancient wisdom tradition, and we work at it at that level rather than at a more superficial level, we work at it at that level of transformation, then we can, you know, effect the most extraordinary healing process, which has been my experience of working with it. And it still compels me today as much as it did 17 years ago.
Well,
so that's a long answer to your question, Damien.
No, that's amazing. Like, I always love to actually ask people about their journeys, because it always reveals gems about the transformational process. And one of the words that really jumped out at me there was the word crisis. And a friend of mine says that the word crisis in Chinese, it actually means, it's got a dual meaning. It actually means opportunity and also threat or challenge. And has that been your experience, John, in the, I guess, lots of people will have been drawn to your work over the years. Have most people been in a crisis state, or is it something that they move towards organically? And how can actually astrology help people through times of change?
Well, yeah, I'd say my experience has been that people generally come to my work, whether as an astrological client or to one of my courses or workshops or trainings. They come because they're in some form of crisis. Now, it may not be the full-blown, you know, kind of full-blown being torn apart type of crisis, but they're at a crossroads in their life where the things that perhaps used to give that person meaning and orientation are no longer doing that. So the things that were previously kind of meeting that need are no longer doing that. And so generally people are going, where do I, you know, what else is there? There must be more to life than this. That's a common thing that people seem to relay to me. It's like, you know, I need to go beyond what I know. I need to look in at myself from another perspective, a different perspective. And I think so whether people are actually consciously aware of it or not, I think an astrological consultation often, and I hear this time and again from people who have come for readings with me particularly, but also, you know, in general, I think people say, oh, my first reading was, you know, it was a turning point. And I always translate the word crisis in a way for turning point. I think opportunity is a good translation as well. But I think this idea of a turning point, and so it's a kind of a watershed almost. And I think that as astrologers, as an astrologer myself, I have a responsibility to really respect the sensitivity of that moment when somebody actually comes in and they make them, you know, you make yourself vulnerable when you come and offer your birth time to an astrologer, because they're going to draw up a chart and have a look in. Have a look at the patterns, the themes, the challenges, the story of your life. Because when I look at a chart, a story emerges out of that chart. The story of a person's life, told not in the way that we, you know, not necessarily through facts, you know, through hard facts, but through metaphor. Astrology works with metaphor. So it creates a kind of mythical narrative of your life. And that mythical narrative, when you tell that mythical narrative, it can release some really quite profound realizations. I think told as a narrative and engaged with as a narrative, astrology has the power to reconnect us to, at first, you know, like any good remedy, at first it can actually seem to open the wound more. It can expose more of it. It can sometimes, you know, it can put us into a place where we have to confront things that we've perhaps been holding on to, and gently, you know, we learn to release them, and then that, you know, and allow that healing process to happen. But I think this idea of crisis and healing really, really go together. Yeah. Mm. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. And I'm also very interested about opening the wound. Now, with people, I guess, going on a transformational process and actually confronting things that are potentially difficult. Just wondering, with opening the wound, do the wounds that open up, are they things that people are aware of and they've just blocked out, or can they actually be wounds from previous lifetimes that they may be unaware of as well?
Yeah, I think both are true. I think often we're aware of a wound. It may just be a general kind of unease with ourselves, with life, with the way things are going. But we may not be aware of the deeper dimensions, of the different dimensions of that. And I think astrology offers us this really radical look at ourselves. And I'm using the word radical there in its kind of original meaning. The word radical comes from the word radix, which means birth, beginning, origin, root, where things come from. And I think astrology connects us back at some really profound level to where we come from. However we understand that, whether we understand that through a series of incarnations, a series of past lives and so on, or whether we just understand that in one life, you know, astrology can speak to us on either level, depending on what, you know, what we actually believe. It can work with either. So back to that moment of birth, and what birth really means. I think that's really important, you know, to get back to that, you know, what, and it can reconnect us to our original purpose. You know, what is that question? What am I here for? What did I come here for? What did I come here to do? You know, what kind of journey am I on? And if we haven't got a good narrative framework for understanding that, then life can just seem random and, you know, disconnected events that don't really link up, and So we end up feeling like we're doing random things. I mean, I don't think we necessarily are, but it can feel that way, that we're doing random things and nothing's really connected together. When we step in, when we step into the wheel, when we step on that journey of the wheel, then we actually step into a paradigm which is rooted in synchronicity, in the idea of correspondence, the idea that things correspond. Mm. And this is really kind of the basis, my understanding of the basis of astrology is really this idea of, as I said earlier, of the correspondence between heaven and earth, or the heavens and earth, Mother Earth and Father Sky, body and spirit, body and soul, matter and spirit, however you conceive it, all of these dualities, if you like. And just to give you one of my favorite quotes around this, this is from Paracelsus, the sort of the Renaissance alchemist and physician. And he said a very important thing. I think it's a very important thing for us to remember as astrologers. It's something I like to remember as an astrologer. And he said that that heaven holds within its sphere half of all bodies and maladies. And what he means by that is that if we miss the heavenly half, we actually do, and Jung worked a lot with this idea as well, Carl Jung worked with this idea, that if we miss the heavenly half and only concentrate on the material half, we're likely to do more harm than good to the patient. In Paracelsus' case, he was talking about his work as a physician. And as an as a scientist, as somebody doing whatever we're doing in life, if we're only looking at the material and not the heavenly, and by heavenly I mean the magical part, the more than human part, the part the other than human part, whether we think of the gods or whether we think of the divine or whether we think about the realm of archetypes, that part which we can't control. Mm. Paracelsus said that we have to integrate both of those, otherwise we do more harm than good. Mm. I think this is something that we've forgotten culturally. Mm. And it only makes sense within a paradigm that actually that is able to weave these worlds back together. I think, I mean, that's something I can say more about. I think
it's an area that holds my fascination at the moment in terms of the way the world's developing so rapidly. You can also almost be, drawn into the fact that we're just purely physical beings having a physical experience, and actually block out the whole metaphysical or go beyond the physical into the other realms. It can be so convincing and so compelling, all the media that we're exposed to these days, the physical possessions we're exposed to, and really buy into that as the only reality. So it's just really nice to hear that you describe that they really necessarily need to be integrated. And if the physical isn't integrated with the non-physical, problems actually start to surface. And I think, is that the way you see the present challenges with, say, the ecology and our, I guess, the way we're living as a human race?
Absolutely. I think it is. I think we're missing the heavenly half over and over again. We're missing the soul. We're missing that dimension. So we're looking for solutions, but we're not getting anywhere near the core, as I see it, the core issue, which is the separation. You know, there's a principle in alchemy. One of the key principles in alchemy is a very powerful phrase in Latin. It's solve et coagula, and it means separate and recombine. And what the alchemists would do is they would separate out the essences and elements of plants and minerals, and most importantly, aspects of themselves, you know, in order to enter the mystery of nature's hidden laws and principles. And then they would recombine when they'd really understood that element that aspect of themselves in isolation. They would then recombine them back together, and in doing so would breathe new life into themselves and then, you know, into their material world, if you like, into their, you know, because
well,
this is, it's working on both levels, because there's a correspondence between the inner and the outer, of course, so you're working on both, but you're including that. And of course the chemist, the alchemist gave way and made way for the chemist to take over, and of course the chemist misses that heavenly half, and I think potentially does great damage, because we've taken on this scientific paradigm that has eliminated that crucial aspect of life, that part that we experience through love, through joy, through our values primarily, through the things that are meaningful to us.
Mm.
And in this very cold, calculated way, that's been separated out. And so we do experiments and we create things, and we don't know what we're doing because we're not including ourselves in the transformational process. We're, you know, thinking we can just affect things in the world without ourselves being connected, being involved. And I think that the, this is what we have to get back to. You know, we have to get back to that, and that's where things like astrology and myth and transformational process, that's why I think so many people now are drawn to this. We have a deep intuition that we need to go through a transformational process in ourselves as individuals and as a culture and as a planet. And, I mean, look at what's happening. Look what's happened to our economy, our ecology. You know, we're at a point of absolute crisis on the planet. And nothing will be the same again. I really believe we're moving into a time that, you know, where we have to reconsider everything about the way we live and the way we are with each other, our relationships, our vocation, what we do in the world. We have to totally change our attitude, our relationship with things like money. I mean, you know, these are profound changes that we've never, you know, that we really have little training in our culture, you know, as well.
Mm. It's very interesting stuff. And one of the things that I've seen personally in terms of helping people to connect and join the dots for themselves in a lot of ways is the use of technology. And I was just wondering, like in this new phase of human evolution, do you think technology will play more of a part, or are we actually being called to return to more natural ways of living?
Well, my favourite is always for returning to more natural ways, I have to say. I personally don't believe technology can save us. I mean, we're moving into the fabled age of Aquarius. Nobody can agree exactly when, but we all have a sense that it's around now. We all have a sense that this is the time of the transition. And I completely share that. I think we're moving into this transition. We're going to see it in our lifetimes. I mean, you know, I don't like to make predictions about what will happen, but I think we're going to go through, you know, some unprecedented changes. We're going to have to deal with some really hard realities as we do that. And I think that, you know, our expectations that we can just keep developing and growing and our technologies will just keep developing and growing, I think it's unrealistic. Aquarius is certainly a sign associated with technology, and I think it's, you know, I think things like the internet have an Aquarian theme to them, because they draw us together as communities, which is the Aquarius. You know, the essence of the sign of Aquarius is that we're drawn together in communities, and those communities are based on our choices, not our bloodline or our heritage. It's what we choose, and so I think this is a key theme of this next phase of our experience on the planet, is that we come together in communities, but then these communities would be very radical and very different and very new. Mm. And but my own strong sense, and I've had this sense ever since I had that experience when I was 21, that what we will develop is we will rediscover our telepathic capabilities. I actually think we're moving into the age of telepathy. Seems like, you know, how's that possible? We're going through such a period of ignorance on one level, and yet I think this is, you know, it's the dark hour before the dawn, if you like. And I think we're actually moving into a phase where we will, you know, we will reach out. Perhaps the internet is a stepping stone, for example, to that. in terms of the technology. I think that, but I think we're. It's very difficult for us to even imagine how life might be 20, 25 years from now.
The sound of telepathy replacing cables and broadband connections.
Yeah, less cables. Yeah, but you know, some cultures still have this capability. They still operate like that, you know, and they would laugh at us. There aren't many left on the planet, but I'm certain there are still societies that still operate telepathically. It's a human capability. We've just lost it, and they would laugh. They laugh at our advanced telecommunication systems. Yeah. You know, it's another story, really. But I lost my thread slightly. But no, there's a really you know, we're in extraordinary times. And just to come back to your question about nature, for me, that's where we can look for the real alchemy. I think, you know, the natural world and the transformations we can observe through the seasons of the year, that's the most authentic alchemical laboratory we have to really understand these deep truths. You know, and my project over the last 2 or 3 years has really been to really investigate very deeply into these natural cycles of transformation. And I think that that's how we return to an authentic way of being in the world. We begin to think again more in cycles rather than in lines. You know, we're so conditioned to think of we began here, you know, there was nothing before, then we began, and then we did all this stuff, and then it came to an end, and then it ended, and we all dropped off the end, you know. And it's like, so the beginning and the end in that frame, when depicted as a line, there's no relationship between beginning and end. It's like we came in from nowhere here, and we drop off into nowhere there. You turn that line into a circle, and of course, when you get to your end, you're back at the beginning, hopefully with more knowledge, with more awareness, with more understanding, and so it actually becomes more like a spiral than a circle. But you've returned to a place that you recognize that is reassuring. This is how sane cultures operate. This is how every culture prior to our modern Western culture operated. Even until very recently, we were still honoring these seasonal celebrations and these seasonal, of course, there's a big revival of that now, which I'm all in favor of, that we reconnect back to, you know, to nature. Rather than trying to go against it all the time, we actually reconnect back and look at how we can, you know, get into the awe, the wonder, the enchantment of natural cycles and understand ourselves and how we transform through the year in the same way. You know, reforming that alliance, that relationship that we've lost, and that's really the basis of the Alchemical Journey program that I've created. Is really is based in that in really profoundly in those ideas.
It was very interesting in London a couple of weeks ago when we had the downpour of snow. There was two really distinct days that just stood out in my mind so strongly. And just observing human behaviour in both of those 2 days. One of the days occurred when it just absolutely pelted down with snow, and it was almost like a complete surrender over the entire of London. There was just no one even dreaming of trying to get in their cars and going to work. It was just literally a tools down day, and everyone sort of went to the local park and made snowmans and did toboggan sledding, and it was almost like a sense of relief across the whole city. And I watched with great interest later on in that week when the snow melted and then had a little bit of snowfall over, I think it was a Thursday evening, and then watching people the following morning. And it was sort of in that in-between space where, like, it had snowed, but there was a possibility of actually trying to get to work. And in the area where I live, just in sort of near Hampstead Heath up in London, the whole roads were like it was like a car park. Roads were closed down, and people were just fighting each other, trying to scrabble their way to work. And it was just really interesting for me to watch it and just see humans trying to override nature. And it was almost like at this moment in time, it was like nature was giving us a little message that maybe it was time to have a fallow period and to lay low and to a way to a rebirthing later on. But just to watch human beings actually override or try to override Mother Nature unsuccessfully. And I kind of thought it was quite interesting just in terms of the way we've been conditioned to also override our own natures. And I guess like with the alchemical journey, is it, am I right in saying that it's a more of a return back to the natural cycles and also our own cycles as well?
Absolutely. I mean, each what we do is I take a group of people through the year. We meet once a month and we spend a weekend completely immersing ourselves in a perspective. And that perspective is the sign of the zodiac through which the sun is traveling through that month. So we meet at the spring equinox in Aries and we spend a whole weekend immersing ourselves in the Aries perspective on life. And we take, we explore our relationship to passion, creativity. We really kind of activate that creative spark within us. So the whole weekend is about waking that up. And we go out into nature and we look at the trees and we look at the buds on the trees. And we imagine ourselves to be those buds, you know, and all the energy that it seems to take to break through, break out in this new energy of life. And it's more than a metaphor, isn't it? It's right in front of our eyes. It's what's right in front of us. It's such a gift. And it can teach us something. And so why not learn rather than try and control natural processes, why not learn from them? Why not take their teaching? I believe that, you know, a tree can be our teacher. I really profoundly believe that trees are teachers for us. And so we can go out and we can watch the tree, watch how it transforms and changes through the year. So we get into the Taurus phase of the journey in May, and we've got the blossom. What a wonderful image for Taurus, the blossom on the tree. So we imagine in Taurus that, you know, what is it that's blossoming for us in our lives, you know, and we really get that sense of that lovely Taurian feel of being in our bodies and the experience of the senses and the beautiful smells of the cherry blossom. We'll go and sit under a cherry blossom tree, you know, and just take in the smells of that time because it's so rich. But then of course 6 months later we're in the sign of Scorpio. We go out that same tree. Not only does it not have any blossom, it doesn't have any leaves, and it's you know, the leaves are around us and they're crumpled and dying, and it's that other experience. And so in Scorpio we're having to experience another part of ourselves, that late autumn time when we're taking that journey within and experiencing that darker side of ourselves, if you like, to recover the truth and it's so we take this journey through the year as a way of, you know, we all have access to this learning. In our culture, of course, we don't respect that. We go out, we do our 9-to-5 job, regardless of whether it's the middle of summer or it's the middle of winter. Mm. And we all know how much easier it is to get up, go to work in the middle of summer than it is in the middle of winter when, you know, when it's cold and, you know, you're going out in the dark and it's just not, you know, it's not natural. And yet we do it because we think that we can override nature in some way. And we don't make those allowances, and we're not taking that inner reflective journey into who we are. So it's an attempt to recover this natural cycle of transformation. And what we're actually doing, the really deep aspect of what we're doing here is we're and this is what I've attempted to do through this program, is we're reviving an ancient mystery school tradition, which is the tradition of the initiate. And in many traditions, we find this 12-stage, 12-fold journey that the initiate takes. And that 12-fold journey is absolutely tied to a journey through the zodiac, through the 12 signs of the zodiac, experiencing a challenge to the individual, the initiate, at each stage. And through that process, through that 12-stage initiation process, the idea is that the initiate becomes free, having experienced each one of the 12 ways of knowing, ways of experiencing, ways of seeing, each one of these 12 perspectives. The initiate is then able to liberate in some way themselves from, from being bound. This is an idea again taken from alchemy. Nicolas Flamel, the famous alchemist, said that he said in accordance with the 12 signs of the zodiac, the prima materia, which is the dark matter, the lead, we could say it's the ego, must pass through 12 gates or stages until it reaches a state of stability where the zodiac no longer has any power over it. And this is a really powerful idea, that we're actually liberating ourselves by engaging fully with each perspective. We can ultimately liberate ourselves from being bound by it. I mean, maybe we have to go around several times to really get each one and to deepen our experience in each one. But I think on lots of levels, there's a really profound teaching in that idea that we immerse ourselves in a perspective, and then we come back and we integrate that perspective back in, and we do that very consciously through the alchemical journey, through the games and processes, and we do use music and theatre and dance and all sorts of creative ways of accessing each, the deep mystery of each zodiac sign, the deep archetype of each sign. Through doing that, we then we go and experience it, and then we integrate it back into our experience of the whole. And it's a joyful journey. We take ups and we experience ups and downs. It's not all, we have to, because each stage requires you to give something up. There's always something to give up in order that we can then move on to the next perspective. We have to release something. We have to surrender something. We don't like surrendering things in our culture, but that's another profound teaching of alchemy, that we have to give things up.
I just love the whole dynamic of actually exploring the other signs of the zodiac. And I guess, like, from the way we're conditioned with the stars, like in its most base form, it's literally like you pick up the paper and you just read the star report for your particular day. But I love just the other end of the spectrum of the whole journey with the mystery of the astrology and actually fully immersing yourself in all the different signs and all the different aspects of self, and not actually seeing yourself as one isolated part of the zodiac, but more of an integration of all these different elements and all these different energies. Just for me, that just seems like a much richer way to explore life.
It's so diverse, it's so rich. I mean, you get 12 ways of experiencing yourself. Most of us probably only usually kind of experience ourselves with one or two or three of these perspectives. And to actually go around and experience all 12 really fully experience it, it opens up, what people continually tell me is that it's opened up their creative potential. They can see all sorts of different ways of approaching issues and challenges in their life. It gives them other ways of looking at the world. It also, invariably makes us more tolerant of each other. Amazing.
I guess now's a great time to actually ask some of the questions that came through. And I had a great question here from Tara in the United Kingdom. I'll just ask it. And Tara asks, I know I'm connected to the cosmos in a deep way and really want to step beyond existing beliefs and assumptions so I can live more magically. For all the noise and the hustle and the bustle in the Western world today, how can I slow down, tune in, and receive the wisdom of the cosmos?
Well, that's a good question. One way would be to go and sit under that tree we were talking about, I guess. And it's a slightly flippant answer, but I think there's something really profound when we remake that connection. Just as easy go and find a beautiful place somewhere and sit under a starry sky and just contemplate the wonder. I often do that when I need to make that reconnection. I'll do one or the other. I'll make that connection with I'll go to a beautiful place, make that connection with nature. I think we can lose perspective. When we're in this crazy modern world where everything's flying around at increasing speeds, and it's so vital that we return to that way of thinking, and just returning to that way of thinking in cycles. Everything is just actually part of a cycle, part of a journey, and there's something deeply reassuring about it. I find it deeply reassuring just contemplating the moon. The moon is can be a great companion if you follow it each month and just watch it as it appears at the new moon, the first crescent moon, and then it grows and waxes and then goes to full, and then wanes, and just the reassuring rhythm of that, you know, can I find be really profound in connecting us back. I think moon, you know, the moon in astrology represents the aspect of us, the nurturing aspect, that deep need that we have for to be connected to our source. And I think the moon, you know, just I know it's not always easy in a cloudy, overcast country like England, particularly with all the light pollution that we have as well, to connect with the sky. You know, on a clear night you can see the moon even with the light pollution. But even better, go to a place where you can see the sky and really just reconnect to it. That's what I'd say. I mean, I think there are many ways, but I think it's just so important, more important than ever, that we don't lose that embodied connection that we have with nature, because we're a part of it at the end of the day. I'm convinced of that. You know, it's obvious, I guess, really.
Cool. That's a great answer. Okay, this one's from Amrita in the UK. And Amrita asks, I think that believing my qualities as a Cancerian have been limiting me. How can I use the alchemy residing in me to blast these away? Oh, sorry, these lies away.
To blast them away. Cancerian. Okay. Well, the sign of Cancer is it's one of the most sensitive signs of the zodiac. Cancer. It's the sign of the crab, you know, who kind of walks gingerly along, taking a step forward and then a step back, and gradually making its way forward. It's a sign of caution, of sensitivity. That you know, the crab hangs around on the edge of the sea, you know, on that kind of liminal boundary between earth and sea, not quite sure which way to go, and that you know, Cancerians, the Cancerian who's struggling, you know, if Amrita is, if you're struggling with this, with the Cancerian quality, perhaps there's a you know, you've become slightly overly defensive, or you know, there's a tendency to want to kind of hide inside the shell, and sometimes with good reason. I mean, protection is one of the qualities of the Cancerian, as well as, you know, it can be difficult as well. That, you know, it's because I like to feel like, you know, can I really step out? Can I really show that vulnerable inner part of me? You know, when you open the shell of the Cancerian up, it's very vulnerable inside, and so the alchemy of Cancer, that what we work with on the alchemical journey, it's the fourth phase of our journey, and we do this around the time of the summer solstice. And it's on our journey, it's the first of the water signs that we encounter. And so we really spend a weekend just really nurturing that part of us, that inner child, if you like, that part of us that needs that comfort and support and that sense of connection. And we go out, you know, in our usual fashion of going out into the woods or going out into nature. We really connect with the roots of the tree in Cancer. We think about our roots, our own roots as well. As we do that, you know, we contemplate our roots, where we come from. You know, we don't see the roots because they're below the ground, but we know that they're there. And those roots are just as, you know, it's the roots as they reach further and further in that take up the nourishment from the soil and from the earth, and that allow the rest of the tree to be strong. And if we neglect those roots, if we neglect where we come from, if we neglect our relationship to our family, to our past, to our history, to our ancestry, we impoverish ourselves. Our tree can't be strong. Our trunk and branches will wither and die. So it's really a reminder to us in the Cancer part of the journey of how important our roots are. And so we spend a lot of time looking at our
looking at our families, and we get the family albums out, and we kind of look at, you know, and we really explore that. It's often one of the signs where we have to get the Kleenex out, because, you know, there are sometimes tears, of course, when we go and drop into that energy. But we're really developing our emotional intelligence in cancer, and it's the sign really that I connect most to emotional intelligence. And I think it's an underrated quality in our society, and perhaps becoming a little bit more nowadays. You know, we're becoming a little bit more cancerian and including that perspective more. Some perspectives get included much more easily than others, of course, in our society. The water signs tend to have a hard time because they're so emotional. You know, they put us in touch with our emotions, which are unpredictable and you can't control them. But so important to make that connection, that deep connection. So that's I hope that's kind of helpful in terms of, you know, the great strength of the cancerian, of making the, you know, that connection to our roots and to our source.
That's a great answer. Now I've got one from Christina in Canada, and Christina asks, what will the age of Aquarius really mean to us?
Okay, well, we looked at this a little bit earlier, didn't we? I think it, you know, we've been through the age of Pisces. The astrological ages move in a different direction to the way that the sun, moon, and planets move through the zodiac. So we're actually going, if you like, backwards through the signs. And we've been in Pisces for 2,000 years or so, and now we're moving to a 2,000-year period when we'll be in Aquarius. And, you know, if we think that, you know, if we look at the themes of Pisces, we've been in that sort of, Pisces, but the kind of struggle, the two fish tied together, trying to, you know, decide which way to go. We've had this period of confusion where we've kind of found ourselves, you know, pulled, and we've had to experience the duality of life very much. You know, there's two fish, and I think that there's a richness in that. I think it's a necessary part of our journey. We're now moving into Aquarius, which has such a different energy to it. Moving into an air sign, moving into a sign of community, and we're moving to this time where things are more distinct. In Pisces, things are quite indistinct. We, you know, there's huge potential for misunderstanding in Pisces. There's also a rich creative flowering as well. You know, we've seen such rich artistic. It's been a period of great art, great poetry. You know, we've had this 2,000 years of extraordinary, you know, diversity of religious faiths and beliefs and different ways of approaching the world. And in Aquarius, in a way, when I see Aquarius as a crystallizing of vision, a crystallizing of ideas, and I think that what we're entering into is a time where we come together, as I said earlier, as conscious communities. And how we do that, we may do that in a variety of ways. I personally favor, you know, returning to a, you know, refounding that sense of local community, but with global awareness. And I think that, you know, that old cliche, think global, act local, I think is a great Aquarian phrase. I think it's very appropriate for this age that we're now entering. As I said earlier, I think it's an age of, you know, where we will develop telepathy. I think we'll become, I think our whole way of communicating, our whole sense of who we are will change from a more individualistic struggle for identity into one where we actually identify as groups and communities. But I think that transition is potentially quite painful, because it doesn't come as a nice smooth transition. These things never do. We have to give up, you know, a collective illusion almost in order to enter this period of you know, this period of community and coming together as communities. And I think we it's about raising consciousness, dramatically raising consciousness. And a whole lot of other stuff too. I mean, it's you know, we could spend the whole call just on that and many others. But it's you know, I hope that kind of addresses some of my kind of main thoughts about it.
Yeah. I think it is a very, very exciting time, and we're coming up to the end of our hour, John. And like, we've covered such a rich terrain of thoughts and ideas, and I almost feel we could actually go on and just keep going with these concepts. There's, I guess, in that terrain, there's beautiful avenues that we can explore. But unfortunately, we've only got an hour this evening. Uh-huh. Now, I'm sure that over the course of the hour, people have really connected with your message and your experience and expertise. And I'm sure there's quite a few people at home just thinking, you know, how can they actually deepen their awareness of themselves through the use of astrology, through the use of alchemy? And yeah, I was just wondering if you could actually share with people how they can keep in touch with you in the future, and also how they can participate in your programs and coaching as well.
Sure. Well, yeah, we offer a range of services. I mean, the main thing I'm promoting at the moment is the Alchemical Journey program for 2009-10, which is 12 residential weekends through the year. We're holding it in Glastonbury, in Somerset, in the UK. And we'll be meeting there around the third week of each month. And we'll be spending, as I said earlier, we'll be spending a whole weekend immersing ourselves in the perspective of that sign of the zodiac that the sun's traveling through, as a way of, you know, of taking this initiation process. We've had extraordinary experiences with that this year. I mean, our group is so strong, and we're actually having our final weekend, our Pisces weekend, of the 2008-09 course. We're meeting on Saturday. It's going to be very exciting, very emotional as well, because we've been on the most extraordinary journey together as a group. And so, you know, it all begins again in March with a new group. So the first weekend, we're actually keeping it open, so anybody can come and participate. You don't have to commit for the whole year. You can come and experience the first weekend and then decide. So it's going to be in Glastonbury. And as part of it, we're also going to be walking in the Glastonbury landscape zodiac. Glastonbury has its own zodiac of these 12 giant figures in a 12-mile radius around Glastonbury, discovered in the 1920s, thought to be thousands of years old, all about a couple of miles across. And we actually walk in these figures as part of the experience, quite unique. And we use that again as part of our playground for exploring these ideas and how we can resonate with that sign. So there's all sorts of magic and synchronicity that happens when you walk in these figures. They're quite transformational in themselves. So that's part of the, didn't really have time to talk much about that, but that's a very exciting development of this year's course. It's the first year we'll be doing that. And it does make it quite unique. I don't think there's anything else out there quite like this. I can confidently say that. Mm. And I really think it's an extraordinary way to come to know yourself in a new way. So that's the Alchemical Journey. In terms of my own personal consultation and coaching, I still work as an astrologer doing one-to-one consultation. I work by telephone, use Skype very effectively, and you know, and we can record the calls face to face where it's possible as well, of course, which is ideal if location permits, geography permits. I also do ongoing coaching with people. I can take you through the Alchemical Journey one-to-one, either in 12 weeks, in 24 weeks, or over a whole year. And again, where geography permits, I have a program where I can meet with you once a month, and we'll spend a whole morning or afternoon together and actually choose 12 specific places that are important to you in your life, and we'll walk around them. And through each place that we choose together, according to the themes of the journey, we actually experience the alchemical journey through your life, through the story of your life. And that's a remarkable experience. It's one of the most exciting things that I'm involved with at the moment. And yes, I'm taking on about four people this year for that. So I've got places as well with that too. So, I can also do phone coaching as well, one-to-one.
Okay. In terms of astrological reports, I know astrological reports are very popular with people these days. Is that something you offer as well? Or?
Yeah, I mean, as a way in at the moment, probably just going to be doing this for another month or so, but we're offering a free astrological report. So if you go to our website, which is www.thealchemicaljourney.com, you can, and you sign up to our mailing list, you will get a free astrological report. They're normally £20. They're computerized reports, so they have limitations because they don't synthesize and they're not intuitive in the way that a live consultation is. However, they are a great starting point, and there's a lot of information, about 10 pages long, and they'll look at all the different placements of your planets in signs and houses and the aspects between the planets and so on. So yes, that's an offering that we've got just up until spring equinox. We're keeping that offer open. So www.thealchemicaljourney.com for more about that.
That's a great offer. I don't know, for me personally, when I first got my chart created, it was incredibly illuminating, and some of the distinctions just purely from the chart itself, without the actual expertise and experience, was illuminating as well. But just to actually have that as a starting point, and then using that as a platform to go deeper with the guidance of someone who's experienced in actually deciphering and synthesizing all the material that you and information that you get in those reports is very useful as well.
Yeah, I think it's a good way to start. It's often how a lot of people get into astrology. They get a report done. It's often the first step for people. Yeah.
Great. Excellent. Cool. Now, yeah, we're literally coming to the end of our call, John, so I just really wanted to take this opportunity to thank you tremendously for sharing some of your insights and wisdom. And I guess the real thing that I took away as well is just, like, we're in an incredibly exciting time on the planet, and they're, I guess, really taking the opportunity to reconnect with nature and the sun and the stars. And, like, I just love a lot of the... It was almost poetic in the way that you described man's role in the cosmos and the universe, and it certainly got me more excited about being able to really reconnect with that energy and that experience of life, which is just so easy to forget, particularly in big cities like London.
It really is. I forget it all the time, even doing this work. I know how easy it is to forget it.
And sort of to bringing the call to its climax, I was just wondering if you had any parting words of advice for people looking to go on this journey of transformation in a magical, creative and intuitive way.
My real passion, I suppose, is that that this is a way of re-enchanting our imagination, opening up what we do, I guess, and this is something perhaps to take away, is that we open up a kind of creative tension between the way that you've seen the world to date, or the understandings that you have, and they may be, and the way your life looks, it may not look as you want it right now, and we step into a world where it can look the way that you want it, and part of the work that we do really is about holding the tension between those perspectives, holding the tension between, all the things that you think aren't right in your life, all the things that don't seem to be working from your perspective. They don't seem to, it's not exactly as you want it. And the vision that you have of how you want it to be. And part of the journey that I like to take people on is to be able to hold that vision of how, that vision of the life that you want. That vision of how we could all, the vision you might have for humanity, the vision you might have for your community and society as a whole, perhaps. And then look at what it is now and be able to, rather than panic because it's not like that, to actually be able to become practiced in holding that tension, which I consider to be a creative tension. And in doing that, to then to be able to relax into all the natural wisdom that we carry within us. And in that, carrying that natural wisdom with us, because that's what we're bringing with us. We're bringing our own natural wisdom with us as we travel around the wheel. It's not like we're not introducing new ideas. These are ideas that we already deeply know. They're deeply within us. We're just remembering them. So it's actually a process of remembering. This is not invented. It's just like this is something that we carry within our collective wisdom, and it's about remembering what we already know. And if we're willing to take that and sit with what can sometimes be an uncomfortable tension between the way things look now and the way things could be, then I think we that's how we enter an alchemical space, and that's how we begin a transformational process.
Wow.
So how about that's my closing remark.
Beautiful, we have beautiful thoughts to finish on.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Damien. I've really enjoyed talking to you, and I hope everyone on the call's enjoyed it as well, and look forward to staying in touch with you and everyone else.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks, John. And thank you to everyone at home as well. Getting your questions each week and also your feedback is really what makes this whole process incredibly enriching. And it's great that it is a global focus as well. We love the fact that people listen into this program from all around the world, and just to come together and share inspiring ideas and to talk about transformation is absolute great pleasure for me to be able to facilitate this space for you. So thank you again, John, and thank you, everyone, and we look forward to having you on a call very soon.
Thanks, Damien. Great.
Take care.